You are listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi everyone, this is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. In this special collaboration with Cure Magazine, we spoke with Dr. Janice Post-White about her recently published book, Standing at Water's Edge. Dr. Post-White was an oncology nurse when her 4-year-old son, Brennan, was diagnosed with leukemia. Throughout our discussion, she reflects on the intersections of her professional and personal life, the lessons she learned, and advice for those processing their own grief in the wake of cancer.
Hello. So yes, I'm Lindsay. I'm with Oncology Nursing News, and Darlene is our rep for Cure today. And thank you so much for finding this time to meet with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Just to kind of jump right in, for those who are unfamiliar with your book, could you introduce yourself and provide a little bit of an overview of the story behind it?
Sure. I was an oncology nurse for 15 years before Brennan was diagnosed, but I was predominantly working in adult oncology. I did some pediatrics, I taught some students in Chicago and then in the University of Minnesota, but my background has predominantly been adult. However, then I had a couple of students in peds-onc at Minnesota. And I remember saying to one student, you know, I really need to know more about pediatric oncology. And that year my son was diagnosed. I guess you'd be careful what you wish for. But what I also learned is I had a PhD in nursing and I had a background, a minor in immunology pathobiology because I was interested in psychoneuroimmunology or how the mind and the body communicate. So all of my research focused in that area. But none of what I did prepared me to be a cancer mom. I did immune assays in the lab and studied imagery and massage and mindfulness meditation and healing touch therapies. And everything I knew about cancer, I thought I knew what it was, but it was when my son was diagnosed that I learned I really don't know how to be a mom. And there's a lot more than just knowing and the knowledge. It's really the emotional realm. And what I guess I learned is that emotions hide, but they don't disappear. And so that's why I wrote the book.
So I feel like writing the book was a very therapeutic process, but what essentially motivated you to put pen to proverbial paper and write the book?
That's a really good question. You know, I planned to write the book when I took a sabbatical over 11 weeks in one fall. That didn't happen. Like, it took me 10 years, you know, but it took me 4 years to write it. And the stimulus was I started to dream that Brennan had died. He was 10 years off treatment. He was a survivor. And I had dreams that of his death. And I'm like, something's buried here and something's trying to come out and I need to face it. And we dropped him off at college 500 miles away. And I said, now is the time. And I took classes. But it was really that realization that I have to deal with this. I've buried these feelings for all these years. And in order, if I'm going to let them go, if I'm going to release them, I have to address them. And keeping stuff inside traps us emotionally, you know, and it affects our well-being. It affects our own health. And until we address it. So that's why I wrote the book. And that's what stimulated me to write it at the time that I started writing. And I took classes and I just dove in and went as deep as I could and processed it. And, you know, it feels a whole lot better coming out on the other side, whether you write a book or a journal or a letter to someone, it feels better afterward.
Right. And I think that's so important for you to highlight that you can't just say you're going to get over an emotion. It's a process. It's a journey and it's different for everybody. And so that kind of leads me into my next question, which is, how did becoming a caregiver change the way you viewed oncology care?
Well, I think probably the most important thing is it was pediatrics and not adult. And so I was launched into a whole new world that I knew a little bit about, but not a lot. And so I think what I learned is pediatrics is family-centered care. And adult oncology, we address the family, we acknowledge the family, we try to include the family. But it we treat the patient. And so the most important thing I learned as a caregiver in pediatrics is how different the worlds are, but also how really it's not about all that as much as it is being there and being present for your person you're caregiving for and being able to ask for help. I think that you can't carry it all yourself. You need to be okay with asking for help and knowing your limits and taking breaks.
Right. Yeah, that's an excellent point. And to switch gears a little bit, to go back to when you were talking about your research, and you talked about you were interested in how the mind and the body work together, particularly in patients with cancer. Could you talk a little bit about your research? And I know you mentioned in your book that you've given a bunch of talks, including one at the ONS Congress. So I'd love to hear a little bit about what you were working on and how Brennan's diagnosis changed your view of your research.
Well, how it changed my view of research is I launched into pediatrics.
Right.
You know, and I did both. I did both pediatric and oncology research. But the bottom theme, I guess, you know, was intervention research. I wanted to make a difference with my patients and families. And so I continued. I just transferred or added on really pediatric research in mind-body medicine and integrative health. So I was doing two studies when Brennan was diagnosed, both of them being with women with breast cancer, and testing the effects of mental imagery, mindfulness, meditation on immune outcomes. So originally I wanted to know I wanted to know the positive. There's so much negative in our world and how about, you know, the big C and the big cancer, but I wanted to know what is it that people have that get them through? How does the mind interact with the body? How does the body signal the mind? And there's a lot of, you know, research since then on neuroendocrinology and the cytokines. And, you know, I studied beta endorphins and natural killer cells and T lymphocytes and cortisol responses. But I wanted to know, is there a physiologic reason? But also really, what's the emotional response when you have something like cancer? And can we make a difference by empowering patients and families? So that's what I was doing at the time. But I also did a study on hope. And I keep coming back to this because it was innovative for me. It was qualitative research. And it was talking to patients and families. They were adult patients. So we're 32 patients that we followed over 18 months. We interviewed them 4 times. And we wanted to know what gives them hope. And does it hope change over time? You know, regardless of what their prognosis is or their diagnosis is. And several things surprised me. One of them surprised me. The themes that came out of it were people found, you know, have been repeated over time in other studies. You know, we find hope by our internal resources and our inner strengths, but also our external, our relationships and our empowering relationships that make us feel valued and cared for, and our spiritual and religious background. And I think one of the things surprised me that people would say, I'm not religious, but they talked about their connectedness with the universe, their connectedness with others. They had a strong spiritual connection. And that came through. And living in the moment, you know, these are the same things that I think, you know, and I was looking back at the study thinking, these are the same things that I talk about in my book. And it's very much living in the moment and be present. But the one that surprised me the most was that patients and families emphasized survival. They needed to know that they had a chance at surviving. And my colleague, a nursing colleague, was diagnosed with breast cancer and was end-stage disease right when my son was diagnosed. And I asked her and I said, or she asked me, what's the prognosis? And then she told me, you know, and at that point it was 85% survival with kids with ALL. My son had an excellent prognosis. We just had to get through 3 years of treatment. And I asked Karen her perspective, and she had end stage breast cancer. And she said, well, I had 10% chance for survival, but I believed I was going to be in that 10%. And it was after my son was diagnosed that I realized how important it is to believe that you will survive, that you have that chance to survive. And so that's one thing that I've carried with me all the way through. And in terms of the Mara lecture, so I did the talk for the Oncology Nursing Society. It was a huge turning point for me because it was 1 year into Brennan's treatment. And it was the first time that I stepped back and reflected on both my role as a mother, my personal experience, and my professional experience. And the talk was for oncology nurses. There were 5,000 in the audience. And so I geared it to them, and it was called Wind Behind the Sails, Empowering Ourselves. Patients and ourselves. And so it was, how do we empower patients and how do we empower ourselves to move forward? And when I sat back to do the talk, I took out Brennan's pictures. I buried my emotions when he was diagnosed, as I was trained to do. He processed his as a four-year-old. He drew pictures that entire first year of his treatment. And many of them are in my book or on my website, standingatwatersedge.com, where you can see them in color. They're in black and white in the book. But he drew pictures, and many of them include sailboats. And I thought, that's interesting. He's never sailed. My husband and I took sailing lessons in Boston Harbor. So I used the metaphor for sailing as a journey with cancer. And whether you're a nurse or whether you're empowering yourself or whether you're empowering your patients and families, it's important to balance the boat. We talk about stressors. We talk about balance and managing those stressors and finding resources. And then they are the wind. The nurses are the wind behind the sails. And I use the analogy of, you're not a tugboat. You're not trying to drag the family along. And you're not a hurricane blowing them when they're stopped. The family's in charge. So the family is hoisting the sails. And, you know, we can't always force things to be on the timeline that we want them to be. The family decides, okay, I'm ready. And they hoist the sails, and the nurses then blow the wind gently forward. And sometimes we get stuck in crosswinds and irons and we stay there, but we just wait. And we wait for the patient and family because we're the encouraging wind behind the sails. So that's what that was about. And Brennan came out and came out to San Francisco at the time. And there's a picture in the book also, but they took a picture for the ONS News. Was it ONS News or the Oncology Nursing Forum? And there's Brennan on stage waving, taking all the applause from my talk. So it was a perfect finale.
Love that. And yeah, that was a beautiful moment in the book, I think. Lots of hope. And it's even better to hear a little bit about the talk behind it. Could you speak for a moment about those pictures that Brennan drew? Because that is such a big focus throughout the book, and how he processed those emotions, and what a almost profound way for a four-year-old to connect with what he's feeling and to put those thoughts down and into pictures.
You know, and it actually is interesting because he was 4 years old, and he the first day in the hospital, he asked for paper and pencil, or he asked for colors and paper. And I asked the child life specialist. And so she brought some toy that you like spin, and, you know, no, he wanted to create. So, you know, I had somebody bring in paper and crayons, and that's what he did that entire first year. He did a little bit after that, but those are the ones that I included in there. And the two that are the most striking to me that are in the book are the first day in the hospital when he drew a house. And you know, he drew a house with a tiny, he told me, it's a little bird stuck in a house. There's no windows or doors. And he didn't want anybody to come in. He didn't say, I'm that little yellow bird, but it was clear that he was. And then 2 days later, it was right after Christmas time, and he added toys and lights. And he said, I wanted it to look pretty for you, Mom. You know, and so that was his way. And I didn't re-look at those pictures until I went to sit down and write this talk for the Mara lecture. And then it just like, wow. This is what he's been through. And the interesting thing about that is, this is Brennan at 4.5 years old and 5 years old. He's now 29. And he's a thinker, a processor, a knowledge person. You know, what does he do with his emotions? He shoves them under the rug like we've all been trained to do, you know. But he's the one who said, we did a book signing at a local indie bookstore. And he's the one, he flew up and participated. And he said, you know, what I learned from reading the book is, it's really not about knowledge alone. It's also about honoring your emotions. So I think that, you know, maybe reflecting back and reading on his own journey. I mean, he drew pictures of an angry day, and it was clearly he was angry. He drew a family picture for preschool at 4.5, right when he went back to preschool, and his little brother Tyler was like a little faint yellow being in the picture. And I'm like, I wrote Tyler's name on it because it's like, no, he's there. Your brother is there. He's part of the family. So it, you know, it was such a powerful reflection on what he had been through. And I wished I knew how to draw and done the same, but I wrote. Some people draw, some people talk. I wrote in a journal, and that's how I processed.
Right. And everyone has different ways they process it. And thank you for sharing that. I think that's so interesting. And when you mentioned Tyler, I was actually going to ask you about him. And, you know, I'd say that in your book, you focus on his well-being almost as much as Brennan. You're very concerned about how he's handling everything, that he's not left out, especially after seeing that picture, making sure that he is just as part of everything. How would you say that you handle that, both as a mom or potentially as an oncology nurse helping a family through? How do you address the sibling of a patient with cancer?
Well, I think it's hard because you're so focused on the one child who's sick. And I kept trying to, you know, and my one student who I said I need to learn more about pediatrics, she was interested in sibling responses. So the alert had gone up. I was very much aware how that, not necessarily how, that cancer affects the siblings just as much and the whole family unit. But what to do with that? You know, there's no studies on young children. Anybody under eight, you know, they don't honor the fact that they can fill out assessments or give appropriate responses. You know, they can draw pictures like Brennan did, but there's very little research on these little kids. And so I was like, I was clueless. My nanny is the one who said, "What have you told Tyler?" I'm like, "Oh, well, I haven't told him anything." I scooped him up and sat on the couch and I said, you know, and said, "Tyler," I said, "Brennan's in the hospital and he's sick. And then they're taking really good care of him. And we expect him to be home soon when he feels better." And I think to me, that's honoring, even though he was 21 months old, he was pre-verbal. I didn't know he could understand. What I learned is that he did understand. He just melted into my arms and relaxed. And just knowing that, you know, we need to communicate, but we also, when the kids are older, we need to listen to them. And, you know, I think when a 21-month-old is observe, and I think what my nanny picked up was his change in behavior. And so I think, you know, And as nurses, I think a lot of families bring their children to the clinic appointments or the hospital. Tyler was not allowed in the hospital when Brennan was diagnosed right away because he had croup that night. It was up all night with him with croup. And so we kept him off the unit. But when he finally could go into the hospital, it was a turning moment for him because he could see his brother. And then when they come in the clinic, they can see what their siblings are going through. So I think that's important, but it doesn't always work. And it was more burden for me to have both my kids. Some families came in with four kids in tow, and I really, you know, honored and respected those parents, you know, but sometimes that's what you have to do. And I think for nurses, I think the most important thing, as well as for parents, is to listen. You need to engage with the kids. You need to ask them, "How are you doing with this?" You know, and oftentimes their feelings come out in behaviors. "What's going on? What are you thinking about? How is this affecting you?" You know, and then listen. That's really, you know, we can have child life specialists there and we can have day camps and day events, but it's really just being there for them when they need you to be there. Just don't forget them.
So what advice would you give families and loved ones who are currently taking on the role of a caregiver for a patient with cancer, especially if it's a younger child with cancer? What advice would you give them?
Well, we give a lot of advice and we give a lot of advice. Right. And you know what? Do your patients and families listen to your advice?
I would hope they do.
You would hope they do.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think the best advice comes from within, comes from you, comes from them. So I think my advice is listen to yourself. Trust yourself. Know that you know yourself, you know your family, you know your child, and, you know, listen to that. But I think the important thing is if you are a person who doesn't tend to reflect or think through things or process things, and we get so busy doing things in our life, I think we need to honor that time and sit back and take that time. You know, it doesn't have to be formal meditation, but it needs to be, how was my day? What am I grateful for? What would I have done differently? How could I have done this better? Because that's what teaches us. And then we give ourselves advice, and that's how we learn to be who we become to be and become better people in our eyes. And that's who we want to be. So, and I think the other thing is read, you know, read about other families, you know, here, read about standing at water's edge.
Perfect plug.
I think it's, you know, we learn from others, you know, and it's the stories that matter. Why did we go into nursing? I went into nursing because I wanted to feel connected and I wanted to make a difference. But it's what I learned from families who do survive and survive, not just physically, but emotionally, and get through. What are their strengths? I learned from other people's strengths, and I think they inspire us. And people, you know, resilient families have strength and they have courage and they have hope. And if they can do it, you can do it. So, you know, we read memoir to see ourselves reflected in, to see ourselves reflected in other people's experiences. And what we, even if we take away one or two things from that, it's important, because then we get inspired to be better and to see things differently. And so read, listen, reflect, think, but listen to yourself and be present. Be present to yourself as well as to your family members.
And that was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.